driver as far as hours of service regulation, whether they're qualified.
Why can't we just let the state police do this? Why should you guys be out there doing this?
Mr. Chair, we have been doing this since 1976. It's a combined effort. The reason we're here today is because, as far as Section 3 of the bill is concerned, is that the Attorney General has informed us that the current language in our statutes is somewhat ambiguous. We want to make it very clear that what we have been doing since 1976 is appropriate. Sections 2 and 4 of the bill were our efforts to make what we do a little more effective, because if we're going from point A to point B to set up an inspection location and we identify an especially egregious violation, safety violation, we would want to be able to do something to ensure reduce the likelihood that that violation is going to cause an accident.
Are you contemplating enhanced activity or a continuation of the activity as you've typically done it for the past couple of years?
Section 3 of the bill is continued current activity. Sections 2 and 4 is enhanced activity.
So you'll have more people on the road?
No. More. Currently, we do not have the authority to stop a vehicle and direct it to a safe location.
So the people you have will be doing more active stopping and checking?
Yes.
Okay, what's the fiscal impact of the bill?
The fiscal impact of the bill relates to the, Chairman Katz has indicated, that there's a real benefit to persuade or make people think that they're going to be inspected at any location, and in addition to that, achieve compliance and an effort to get them on the safer routes by pursuing complaint actions, monetary complaint actions, when they are found in violation. And the majority of the costs associated with that would be the Attorney General costs of pursuing the complaint activity. And there would be some capital outlay expenses associated with lights on the vehicles and radios in the vehicles, and then additional training.
Now, it looks here like you'll be making more money than it cost.
Yes, our analysis supports that.
If we approve that, I'd like to see that go into ending balance, only the amount to, you know, I don't want this to be a cash cow here, a slush fund. So, Rep. Minnis?
Well, one of the issues that I wrote down on the bill when I was reviewing this had to do with this additional authority to make traffic stops. In essence, that's what you would be doing, is PUC inspectors or whatever they're called would actually be pull a truck over on the highway.
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, that's why sections 2 and 4 of the bill are critical that they're together, because we wouldn't be stopping unless there was probable cause that there's an administrative violation being violated, rule being violated.
I don't have any problems with the competency to do that, but I do have a problem with the procedures that might be used in officer safety, vehicle approach, vehicle stop types of training, and this kind of thing that I don't think PUC inspectors have. If they do, let me know. But, you know, traffic stops are dangerous. At least they can be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, that was a concern of the Commission, and we coordinated with the Oregon State Police to gain the training necessary, and that's part of the fiscal impact.
Another question. Are the PUC individuals who are going to be making these stops, are they going to be armed?
No.
Okay. Is the truck driver going to know they're not armed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, I think that it could be overstated the aspect of our intent for these sections of the bill, that it would be the very rare instance where we identify a real safety concern that we would stop a vehicle. Our relationship with the industry currently is that when we're conducting inspections, it's a real positive relationship generally.
I stopped trucks before, and I have had some very negative experiences with truck drivers as a law enforcement officer. Not very positive at all, even though I had probable cause to stop the truck for any number of reasons. The one-on-one contact was not very positive. And the concern I would have is whether or not the PUC officer is going to be trained in an officer survival skills, whether or not they're going to have weapons training if that's necessary. Because frankly, traffic stops are like getting on the wrong airplane out of Chicago. You know, you may stop one that frankly you got Carl Cletus Bowles in the back seat, and all hell's going to break loose in just a couple of minutes. And your number comes up. It may come up now, it may never come up through a career. But the fact of the matter is, statistically, you're going to find somebody, you know, some police officer, like 130-some a year, are killed. You know, about 40 of them are killed throughout this country just on traffic stops alone. And what we're doing is we're creating a situation where a PUC individual is going to make a traffic stop. And I'm not sure under what situations, whether it's a controlled situation. I understand pulling into one of the truck stops or something of this nature, but it does raise a number of safety problems for individuals working in this capacity. I guess I would suggest if we're going to pursue this that these officers or people have some additional training and capabilities of making a traffic stop, how to position their car, how to approach the vehicle, whether, and you guys may want to consider whether or not they should or shouldn't be armed. I guess it just opens up a whole Pandora's box of situation.
Or, Mr. Chairman, Representative Minnis, if I may, or call the state police.
Well,
which is,
you know,
that would be very well.
Yeah, but see, what I'm saying is you give them the authority. Again, it's the wrong plane out of Chicago. The truck driver pulls over and gets out and he blows your brains out. And you got an employee, a state employee, laying in the street with no gun, no defense, no training. And you got some widow suing the state of Oregon saying, my husband or my wife did not have adequate, sufficient training to do this kind of work. It's one thing to say they've been trained in vehicle stops and defense tactics and vehicle approaches and all of these kind of things. It's another thing. So I guess we need to look at the liability question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, your concerns are certainly concerns that we had when we were discussing this, and that's why we included in our discussions people from the Waymaster section who do these stops as well, and the Oregon State Police, and they did advise us that we received this training that is contemplated in this fiscal impact. The bill contemplates the lights on the vehicles to be red, so that it's the same type lights that are used by the Waymasters, so it's readily apparent the nature of the stop is not the normal police activity.
I have a couple questions, and recognizing Representative Minnis's point that there's a certain danger, have you looked at the alternative of contracting with the state police or other police enforcement agencies to be more proactive in their inspections? Perhaps instead of training PUC employees to be cops, we could train the cops to be safety inspectors for the PUC and have a contractual arrangement where, and judge it by their performance.
Mr. Chair, yes, we do that. Motor Carrier Safety Assistance Program, the Public Utility Commission is the lead motor carrier agency, and we have relationships with the Portland Police Bureau.
Why can't we just expand that?
Because of their limited resources, they have a certain dedication of effort. Mm-hmm. What we're concerned about, the most significant concern is the ability to continue our inspection activity as we have done that Section 3 of the bill provides.
So you have been stopping motor carriers. You have been pulling over trucks.
Not pulling them over, but at setting up inspection locations, requiring them to pull into the inspection location.
You get signage where everybody's in the same boat.
This would allow you to chase them with a red light on the car.
That's what Sections 2 and 4 does.
2 and 4, only in the egregious circumstances. I think it would be a rarity.
Senator Cairns.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not impressed with the idea of, in the egregious circumstances, somebody playing state patrol here without, because we're going to pull this Hummer over, and we got somebody who's in egregious circumstances, probably not the best person to be pulling over in the first place. And you know, I don't disagree with Representative Minnis.
Mr. Chairman, and Senator Cairns and members of the committee, the scenario that Representative Minnis drew out was very compelling. But there are other widows and orphans in this state who need to be concerned, whom we ought to be concerned about. And they are the ones who, unfortunately, because a reckless carrier does not maintain a safe truck or cargo, or the driver himself is not safe, gets into accidents. And I admit that what you said is quite compelling, but you have to understand that the purpose here is to improve traffic safety and save lives on the highway.
Wait, Mr. Chairman, let me ask. The money comes, however, from the increased activity, which would be permitted under Sections 2 and 4. Is that not correct? Or is the money coming under the continuation of the authority you've got under Section 3? Mr. Malkasian said that Section 3 is a continuation of current level of effort, which did not yield, is not responsible for the fiscal impact, expenditures, or revenue, but rather comes from the activity under Sections 2 and 4.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cairns, I didn't explain that well, if that's what you inferred. I tried to indicate that we have identified this as a significant concern on off-route locations, and that it would support a more aggressive policy of the commission to pursue complaint activity. So we would do that even at our current level.
Okay. So if we were to send you out of here with Section 3 of the bill, you'd be happy to continue doing what you're doing, if that's what you got.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cairns, I think that's certainly critical and the most significant thing here. I think the only thing that we're concerned about is we would be missing an opportunity. And I guess to expand on that, I'm perceiving that you're thinking that we notice as an egregious safety offense the offense of the driver. It may be the driver's safety that we would be dealing with through the noticing of a severe safety concern with the operating system of the vehicle, and by stopping the truck, we're not only safeguarding the public, but the driver of the vehicle as well.
Let me ask this. We got a representative of the state police in the audience. Is he here to observe or to speak in favor or to give us information on the bill?
He's available to...
Come on up.
Mr. Chairman, while we're doing this, and for the commission, since we've got OSP, I think it's important to note that in OSP's budget, there was $1 million transferred from Public Utilities Commission to the Department of State Police for this enhanced activity. And we might want to talk about what we're doing here on top of $1 million. And, you know,
okay.
It's very important to understand where we're going. That was an enhanced activity.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Cairns.
Question to the lieutenant. You've heard the discussion about the enhanced activities under Sections 2 and 4 of the bill. Is this a good thing for people who are out there representing the PUC and the Motor Carrier Division making these kinds of highway stops?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ken Chichester, Lieutenant with State Police. The department supports this bill. We think it would benefit the motoring public, the trucking industry, traffic safety in general. The first concern that I expressed when approached by PUC was the very concern that Representative Minnis raised about the safety of PUC employees stopping trucks. That is the reason that in the bill there is some money for our agency to provide training for Public Utility Commission employees who, in my understanding, are a limited number of personnel employed by PUC who will be given the opportunity, if this bill passes, to in fact stop vehicles after they observe a violation to conduct a safety inspection. So, yes, we do support the efforts in PUC as expressed in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, question, Mr. Malkasian. Can you put your finger on the words on House Bill 2295, which says that an appropriately trained authorized representative of the commission may do this?
They're not there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cairns, no, those, that language is not in there. The additional language in the amendments to the bill were an authorized representative, but I think...
Okay, wait, real quick. I'd like to move that we put in language requiring the authorized representative be trained to the satisfaction of the Oregon State Police.
Good.
And that may mean a special program, or it may mean going over to McMinnville to run through the course there for a few days.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that. I think that's a great amendment. Let's get to the...
What do you think?
Mr. Chairman, I'll accept that motion. I think that's fine. And then there's one other order of business before we leave for the call.
Okay, let's accept that amendment.
How about if we move the bill?
I'd also like to have language added to Section 2 that the program be approved by the Oregon State Police to be consistent with good law enforcement, with appropriate safety practices, something to that effect. And that would be a new section, Section 4.
Great.
So not just training the individuals, but the way the program is run and the rules that guide the actions of the employees need to be reviewed by someone in law enforcement who understands truckers' minds, I guess.
If I may make a comment, Mr. Chairman, that could get us in a little bit of trouble because we receive training in truck inspection from the Public Utility Commission.
Okay, but they're going to receive training in how you stop a big, mean ex-biker trucker who's on methamphetamines, been up 16 hours, and is late. Okay.
Not in a good mood.
Okay. So you're going to treat them how to safely do that and protect motoring public through correct procedure.
Okay.
So maybe we can't say you give them approval, but they must develop the program in consultation and consistent with appropriate law enforcement principles.
That's a better way to do it.
And
well, the Oregon State Police have a training function at DPST, and they can do it in conjunction with Oregon State Police Training Division.
So we strengthen that.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there objection to the concept with the exact language to be reviewed?
But have we gone in the direction more of saying that it's still a responsibility of the PUC and either we don't get the responsibility to the OSP.
No.
So I think we'd give it to PUC.
Except per contract.
Yes. There's two ways we could do it. One of them in consultation with, and the alternatively is to go to TSPC.
Yeah.
DPSD, rather.
Yeah, which they will. They will go to the state police per the contract permitted in the state police budget.
Okay.
And also, this will give them the authority to do more than just sit passively and wait for trucks to pull in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
No, I understand.
Okay, so that amendment is adopted.
Aye.
Okay, objection to the bill with the amendments?
No.
Pending final review before I sign the budget report. Okay, no objection. Bill's out.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If we could go back into a reconsidered vote by which we passed out House Bill 2297, we forgot to include an amendment that was...
Oh, you're right. Very good point.
Okay,
reconsider the vote by which we passed out 2297. Objection?
Aye.
Okay, no objection. We're back to 2297.
A10 amendments, which is in the back of a letter by the Auto Body Craftsman
the definition.
Association.
Okay, Rep. Minnis moves the A10 amendments to House Bill 2297. Is there objection to the A10 amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. You got that?
Okay.
Rep. Minnis moves the bill to the full committee as amended to do pass recommendation. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay, we're adjourned. We'll meet tomorrow morning, and then at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, we'll try to meet again and get through our business.
Spills, we have oil spills.
Anyway. Try to find,
keeps coming,
our budget document. Okay, the big budget document.
Big spreadsheet.
Okay, I'd like to open the work session on the...
Excuse me, are we supposed to find a document?
find your DEQ budget. Find your big spreadsheet.
I can see it.
Take a moment there.
Is it in here? It sticks out.
Oh, the really long one.
You're wondering. Who can battle coding no on everything?
Oh, yeah. See. Big talk.
We need some water quality people.
Okay, I know. Yes.
Front center.
But I have some.
Fred, your water quality people.
Do you have any of your water quality people here?
Yes.
Okay, there, come, great.
Wonderful.
Okay, now, what I want to do is just jump down to some of the things on the bottom.
Yeah.
Of our spreadsheet.
Does this subcommittee get battle paid?
It all.
We get battle paid?
We get Purple Hearts.
I just didn't get the additions and subtractions.
Dueling scars, the Heidelberg effect. The first thing I wanted to suggest is that we consider the Willamette River Study and the Columbia River Study, and I've asked Fred to give us some information on the Tualatin, what we can do there to advance the cleanup of that particular stream. And try to make some decisions on the rivers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm a little disturbed by the fact that the Tualatin River Study bill is in Ways and Means, and we're not looking at that as a bill and in the context of what's going to be done here. Mm-hmm. Whether or not what's proposed in that bill is redundant. The bill's just kind of sitting off on the shelf and de facto saying that the Tualatin River is going to be taken care of through the Willamette River Study, and I'm not sure that that's the case.
No, actually, the Tualatin's being taken care of by significant activity by the department, which is continuing. Lots and lots of activity and lots of money.
3338, right?
Yeah. I think we need to see 3338.
I don't think we're going to see it, unfortunately.
Well, you can count on two no's. How's that?
Okay. No money for rivers. All done. Tell Senator Yee, she'll be displeased. Okay, let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the water quality standards, the base restoration. Okay, we haven't made a decision on that yet.
Mr. Chairman, Lydia went through an explanation of that the other day, but maybe just a quick update on it.
Mr. Chairman, Lydia Taylor, Water Quality Division. Decision Package 103 is a fund shift package internal to base budget. The package provides for funding for existing positions to do the following. The funding to pay for one FTE to do our continuing TMDL work. Mm-hmm. Funding for the equivalent of four FTE to continue our ambient water quality monitoring network together with assessments and trend analysis of water quality, this laboratory scientific work. The equivalent of two FTE to do our standards and assessment work, this required Clean Water Act work, and the equivalent of one FTE to do something in excess of 300 public meetings and public permit notice actions that are required to deal with public comments on our actions. It's the equivalent then, Mr. Chairman, of eight existing FTE.
Okay, why don't you take a pause and refresh yourself until we regain the majority. No, there wasn't really a motion. I raised the issues for discussion, and there didn't appear to be a consensus.
So we just moved on.
I dropped the gavel to dramatize the fact that we moved on to another area, not to signify a decision. Okay, I think we can pick up again. If we don't fund this particular shift, and this is the shift, isn't it?
That is correct.
Yes. This is the fund shift. We have a reduction in base budget activity for water quality.
That is correct.
Okay. And can you tell me, and I know you've probably told us twice, specifically which page the decision package is on and what those people will actually be doing, those particular positions? Well, I told us three times, Lydia.
Sure, I'm happy to go over it again. We need to start on page 156 of the budget document.
156, okay. And that's package 101.
That's package 103.
103.
Decision package.
Ah, a little hard to read the numbers. Okay. And here's what the department would be doing with the money. 1, 2, 3. Now, what are the priority water bodies that you would be identifying TMDLs on?
Could I ask Mr. Neil Malay to respond to the...
Pull up and aim the mic toward you.
Mr. Chairman, the priority water bodies that we'll be working on this next year include beginning the TMDL process on the Grand Ron River, is our new TMDL effort, and continuing to complete TMDLs on the Pudding, on the Columbia Slough, and Coquille Rivers. And we have work also going on in the Klamath. Mm-hmm. And so we're completing work on four existing efforts that we're working on in TMDLs, and then to begin a complete effort on the Grand Ron.
Okay.
Chairman, the one thick document, I think we had a light green cover on it, the 305B report, had in it a listing of the water bodies, all of which would be the subject to this work. What Neil's outlined are the next biennial work. The rest of them are ones that are required under the federal statute.
Okay. And the 10 water quality limited stream segments per year to establish TMDLs, the Grand Ron would be the first of those. You've already got them on the Tualatin, right?
That is correct.
Okay, and Lake Oswego?
That's correct. And we're right now putting together the project work plan for the Grand Ron.
Okay. And could you give us some of the other ones? Have you memorized them all?
Well, altogether we have 15. They're on what we call as our D1 list, which is an identification of those that are the critical ones that we have TMDLs on. And I could run down the full list if we would want to. In addition, I think on that particular reference in the budget, we're referencing the D3, which are those that have been identified as having violations of standards, but they do not have the number of violations as those list of the first 15. And those are ones that we'd like to examine a little bit closer to see if they are critical enough to be put on the TMDL list. And in the 305B report, we have a list of probably about 70 of those streams where we've identified some problems, but we don't know at the current time whether or not they are critical enough to go on the TMDL list.
Okay, so you'd be doing research.
Research, additional analysis on those.
How much of the activity, Neil, funded by this package in points 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, is required by the federal act and agreements with the federal government?
All of the TMDL effort is required.
It's all required.
Yes.
Chairman, in the original package that was handled out back in water quality, if you have it, on pages 9 and 10 listed the TMDL stream reaches that need to be addressed by water body and by pollutant, and what is that, what beneficial use is being threatened.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're looking at decision package recommendus 103, which starts on page 158, the water quality package. 156? Mine says 150. Oh,
which
it is.
Book?
The big book. The big book.
The big book.
The Bible.
All righty. Could, Mr. Chairman, could you tell us again about this type of work? this type of work relating to Tualatin?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Calori. The work that is shown in this is work that we either have done and completed on the Tualatin or are in the process of working on the Tualatin River. That includes continuing ambient water quality monitoring, continuing assessment of the benefit of the improvements that we're requiring from both the sewage discharger, Unified Sewage Agency, and from the non-point source dischargers on the Tualatin. That work is some small portion of it continued in here, and it's the very same type of work that we are doing in other rivers in the state of Oregon.
Okay.
Okay, additional questions?
This
is required by the federal statutes and rules
that exceed the quality of the river.
Yes.
Let me put it in the form of a motion. Is there objection to approving this transfer from to general fund of $888,717 for package 103.
What? This is a general fund package?
Yeah. Kay, why don't you explain again what the transfer represents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is a base budget package that replaces funds that have declined over the years, federal and other, and provides for continuation of the eight positions that are in the base budget. We've recommended approval of this, and in fact, we have included it in the base calculation from which we have made adjustments to the budget, which in fungible dollars already produced $1.4 million. And that is so this is kind of the other half of the reductions we've taken have assumed that $888,000 in the base. We recommend approval of this package.
And this is part of the requirements that we have to perform to meet the Federal Clean Water Act standards and performance level.
No.
Hey, you're the